Hey, Task Force. This is Trevor, and I have a very important announcement to make. So as some of you may have heard last week, our parent company, Rooster Teeth, was informed that it is being shut down. Later this week, we are going to upload a separate update about the future of Red Web and what the broad implications of that are for us. It'll be right here in the podcast feed, so you won't miss it. We're going to go over as much as we have, but suffice to say, we're still figuring things out. Thank you so much for all of your love and support over these past 3.5, 4 years. But for now, here's our regularly scheduled mystery. It is said that on Halloween night, people from all over the state of Virginia gather around or under a local bridge. Legend says that if you don't leave the area before midnight, you might not live to tell the tale. Today, we discuss the story and origin of the urban legend known as the Bunny Man. This is Red Web. Welcome back, Task Force, to Red Web, the podcast all about internet mysteries, supernatural phenomenon, and unsolved true crime. Today, we're discussing a very interesting case, an urban legend, in fact. I'm your resident mystery enthusiast, Trevor Collins, and joining me hearing this urban legend for the very first time, Alfredo Diaz.
This sounds like the premise to a cheap, but not essentially like bad horror movie.
Indie level.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Charming.
Yeah, like an indie level.
Relatable.
Yeah, indie level. Cheap, but not bad.
Yeah,
indie level.
Yeah. It does sound like that.
I've also come to realize, I think in this like space, I like urban legends the most.
Yeah?
Yeah. So this is, I'm very, very excited. I'm interested to see where the bunny aspect comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Is the dark figure you see a bunny man? Which reminds me, I used to be scared of the Easter Bunny when my parents made me sit down and take a picture with them.
And there are good reasons,
yeah,
given some of what we're about to discuss today.
Well, see, bunny should never be that big.
And kids have those instincts, and you especially, with your gut check, you know, you just, there's some sort of psychic ability emanating off your aura that scares me sometimes.
Some connection there that I need to like cut. I need to find a big pair of scissors.
We need to further tether that. Like Ghostbusters into the box.
It's not strength.
I'm going to capture your essence and know how to duplicate it so we can all be psychics.
I feel like I'm gonna be if I'm ever a ghost, I just want to be chilling and vibing, and Trevor's like, I got to catch you.
I'm like, I'm gonna put you in this box.
No, like, you don't put me in no box, Trevor. me in no ghost box.
I gotta science it.
And the last thing is, how big is this bridge if you're gonna have a ton of people like chilling under it?
Yeah, so we say people from all over Northern Virginia. It's kind of an urban legend again, so it's well spread. I don't know how many people go at midnight on Halloween specifically, but it's not super long. It's a modest length. Christian, I don't know if we actually discuss later on the dimensions of this bridge, but it's,
yeah,
I would hazard a guess as to saying like 8 feet wide. It's a pretty small opening. It's a train bridge with a small opening. So, yeah. And it's also not super deep.
Oh, so not that many people. You probably have some people on the edge that are like, I got a foot in.
Right. This isn't like one of those 100 plus foot long bridges where you kind of like can't
like
see the end.
Lanes all together.
Yeah. Or you're in the middle and then suddenly you're having like a, someone's entered the tunnel on both ends kind of moment.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
There's no official dimensions. It's just kind of looking at photos of it and extrapolating from there like Trevor was doing. But yeah, it's 8 to 10 feet wide. Maybe you're about to learn how bad I am at estimating distances. 20 to 30 feet long. It's a pretty small,
very tiny,
small area. Yeah.
So like, I feel like there are a lot of local haunted bridges in a lot of states. I grew up near one and there's always a tale.
Did you go?
Oh, I wanted to. I wanted to gather some friends and go at dusk. But it was like, I'm 14. I can't drive. It's an hour away.
Yeah.
And my parents are like, we're not doing that. But there's always some bridge somewhere and they usually like curve or ebb or they're really long.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's interesting, but it does have, so we're going to break down what that urban legend is. We're going to try to ground it in reality a little bit as to maybe why it's an urban legend and then give some sightings and some of the origins elements to it.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how this urban legend came to be.
Oh yes. So the bridge is officially called the Colchester Overpass. It is a single lane road under a railroad track in the woods of Clifton, which is a city roughly 30 miles southwest of Washington, D.C. these monsters and myths and legends, like kicking it around just in this little area.
They do.
It's the Appalachians, you know, it's like historic, spooky mountains.
Or probably just like the culture there. You got, yeah. You get a couple urban legends or cryptids and people are just like, well, they get buck wild with it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's the next
inspire
one? Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Avengers of the cryptids live out that way. Yeah. Now, it is said that the visitors leave from under the bridge just before midnight, because if they don't, they might become the victim of the Bunny Man. Others say that it doesn't have to be Halloween, that you can go on any given night and say Bunny Man three different times, kind of like
Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary. And if you do that, he might show up to slit your throat and hang you from the bridge or the trees. Would you risk it?
Has anyone been?
I don't know.
Hanging from the bridge or the trees?
Yes.
Oh.
Now, was it because they said Bunny Man three times?
Right.
Probably not.
Probably not.
But we'll find some reality in the legend, you know? But it is also said that you might see him and hear the screams of his victims, because there are elements to the story where people have seen things from afar. They left, but their friends didn't, right? Some legends also say that you might see rabbits running around before he shows up.
What the?
Yeah. The Bunny Man is said to be the ghost of a man dressed up in a bunny suit or a costume, often carrying a hatchet or an axe. But some legends state that the lights under the bridge become so bright that some of the victims don't even get to see him before he strikes.
Is that worse?
The lights get so bright that you can't, you're like, ah, what's going on? And then you feel a, ah.
Yeah. Or like the lights go bright, you hear some noises, so you know someone's there.
Ooh, especially if you're alone.
Yeah.
You just hear like...
Is that worse? Or like seeing him, like in hearing, so you hear him close, right?
Yeah.
The lights are bright, you can't see, you hear him close, you know he's close.
Yeah.
Or you see him, but he's way off in the distance.
All terrible thoughts.
They all suck.
All terrible thoughts.
Probably the distance one, because I'm under the false pretense that I can outrun this
guy.
We can
run, right. And then you're going to trip on a route and it's all over from there.
Both terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't want the lights to get so bright I can't see, and then I hear like a soft padded bunny foot suit kind of footprint next to me. No. Some claim that he specifically attacks couples in parked cars. There are many stories about the origin of Bunny Man, but the general gist is that the urban legend is that you are not safe around the Bunny Man Bridge after midnight. So let's talk about some of those legends, and then we'll move into, of course, some of the reports and...
Yeah.
Actual stories from the 1970s that could be, as is theorized, the origin for this entire thing.
Ooh, okay.
But otherwise, the legends go back to the early 1900s. So Timothy C. Forbes published the most commonly referenced origin story online back in 1999. As the most popular legend goes, the post-Civil War townspeople of Clifton wanted to relocate the local asylum in 1903 and passed a petition for it. Now, I want to be very upfront about a few elements here. The so-called local asylum, we don't know the name of it. We can't find any record of it. So there are some holes in the story and in the plot as we move along. Again, it is an urban legend. And so we're coming in with the idea that it is a story. However, I'm curious in figuring out what are the truths that build to the story.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like specifically with urban legends, that's where people take the most liberty.
Yeah.
With the storytelling and... what are quote-unquote facts.
Right. Well, some people are storytellers and they want to elevate it. They want to spook their friends or their kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people, it's like a game of telephone. They misremember it. They change it. You know, what is going to be more scary to you? I might shift it a little bit for my audience. But in the fall of 1904, the patients were supposedly moved from this local asylum and they were bused towards Lorton Prison. This would be the temporary housing place for these patients until a new facility could be built. It's unclear if this was an asylum for the mentally ill, for convicts, or for a mixture of both.
That's an interesting transition. I mean, these are patients of unstable mind and you send them into a prison.
Right.
That could very much aggravate these patients.
Oh, yeah.
And also, they're not even there, so it seems to be even mildly temporary. If they're going to build a whole building, that's a year... two?
And yeah, how long,
moving.
Right? Yeah.
We all work with contractors. We know how that timeline goes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, supposedly in this move, it's very Halloween-esque, right? Michael Myers-ish. On the move, one of the buses actually tipped over, and in the crash, many of the inmates were injured, but some escaped into the surrounding forests. After 4 months, all but two of the runaway inmates had been found by police. These two were Marcus Walster and Douglas Griffin. Supposedly, while police were searching the woods for these two men, they came across multiple disemboweled bodies of rabbits, some hanging from the bridge. Eventually, police discovered the body of Walster hanging near what is now known as Bunny Man Bridge, somewhere between the end of 1904 and the beginning of 1905. In his hand was a sort of makeshift hatchet, a strong branch with a carved rock attached to it, and the police believed that Walster had attacked the bunnies. He was the one kind of disemboweling them, perhaps even consuming them to survive in the woods for these months. But as time went by, many people started to believe that instead of it being Walster, it might have been Griffin. Because now Walster's been found, he's hanging, right? He's dead. But Griffin at this time was still missing. Now, some versions of the story say that Griffin was arrested because he murdered his family on Easter Sunday. Yet another version says that the police almost caught Griffin, but he was struck by a train passing over the bridge.
That one lends itself more to the urban legend aspect. See, here's the thing. Are they hunters? I mean, we're not going to have this information. But, like, it's like, are they hunters? Because how are they catching all these bunnies?
That's a good point.
That's difficult.
Bunnies are kind of, like,
they're fast.
Skittish and very fast.
They're skittish and they're fast. Like, every time I let my two corgis in the backyard, they chase after these bunnies and they get away every time because they're just so fast. Me, as a human, not as fast as a corgi. Like, I'm not going to catch no bunny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they could be laying out traps and everything like
traps,
that.
Traps. I don't know if they've found, like, vegetables. Sort of,
yeah,
some sort of bait.
Lure the bunnies.
Or they just sat very still, and very patiently for a long time.
Yeah, but that's just what crossed our mind. I was like, very skillful
people. It's a valid thought.
Yeah.
It's a valid thought. So, the search for Griffin supposedly ended in April 1905. In the common telling of the story, many months later, in October of 1905, dead rabbits were once again found, discovered around the bridge. On Halloween night of 1905, teens were hanging around what is now called Bunny Man Bridge, but wasn't at the time. So they had no reason to fear.
Right.
They're hanging around this bridge, and three of them happened to stay there past midnight. This is how people kind of figured out the rules.
Okay, because I was about to determine how do we know.
Right. And again, this is as the legend goes, right? So the next morning, each of them were found hanged and disemboweled with their throats slashed. The next Halloween, 1906, a girl went to the bridge with other teenagers, but she left before midnight, knowing what had happened a year prior. Some versions of the story say that she was teased for being too scared and left purely out of embarrassment, just wanted to be away from the teasing, and then say that she remained close by to see what would happen, if anything would happen, and at midnight, she claims that she only saw a bright light and heard screams coming from the bridge. Supposedly, the girl was blamed for the murders, but these murders continued even after her arrest. And for over 100 years, the same thing would supposedly happen at Bunny Man Bridge every Halloween, and now Bunny Man is considered to be an evil spirit.
I mean, I guess, like, I understand, like, law enforcement has to do their due diligence, right, and arrest the person that was there at the scene of the crime. But that can't stick, right? Like, there's...
Feels like a perfect setup for an indie horror movie, right?
Like, where's the weapon?
The protagonist
the
gets blamed. Yeah. They go to jail, and they go, we got our guy.
Yeah.
Period.
It's true. If we're not referencing a specific horror movie, we're putting it in the landscape of a movie.
What was the one with the lighthouse and the silence, right? With the woman.
Was that the Tooth Fairy one?
Yes.
Yes.
Why am I blanking? Darkness Falls.
Yeah.
Yes.
That movie was amazing. Somebody goes to prison for an untimely presence around someone's disappearance.
I remember the movie being good.
And then the entity goes ripping apart the police station while they're in prison.
Yes, that scene was terrifying to me.
It was such a good movie. I watched it with a broken arm. Anyway, I broke my arm that night, but I didn't know it. So
did the tooth break it?
Well, I don't, maybe. What is the arm but a giant tooth?
That's true. Yep, that's, quote that one. See, my issue with, like, I'm very much like, follow the rules to a T, you know what I mean? And that's why I'm terrible with, like, building stuff from, like, IKEA, where you go, step one, use these four long bolts, and you look at the bolts and you go, well, there's two short, two long, what the hell? Like, now I'm stuck and confused.
Yeah.
My issue with this is, what happens during daylight savings time?
Oh, man, you think,
that's a
good question.
It, dude.
Like, Bunny Man, is he on Eastern or Central? Does he change for the season?
Right.
Does he fall back or does he do what Indiana used to do, which is just, we're just going to stay put and let everyone shift around us?
That's what I'm saying. I have no clue.
Right.
But that's a question that comes to mind.
He operates on 1905 time. You know what I mean? That could be a, you know, seconds off.
It could definitely be off. Like, it'd be screwed, man. I don't know. Time back then, maybe it was slower. I don't know. There might be some scientific thing that Trevor's like, well, back then time moved 0.555555 millimeters.
Then, before the Gregorian calendar, we had 13 months, and every month had 28 days.
And over
was
the
even.
Years, it shortens of one, like 1 minute, 30 seconds. I don't know, man.
Don't scare this guy with leap year.
This year's leap year, right?
Don't let him know about it.
This year, the year leaps?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Divisible by four, I think. So yeah, that's the legend, and it's fascinating. It has all these kind of nuances. Of course, again, jury's out on if any of this is factual.
Right.
However, what Jillian did was go into 1970 reports, dig into a man named Brian Connolly. We're going to talk about him and his theories on what was the genesis of this urban legend. What actual events is it leaning on to kind of validate its existence, how it kind of grabbed hold of people in the zeitgeist and kind of stayed alive on its own. That's what I find very interesting about this one.
So let me ask this. Is it confirmed that tons of people have died there in this bridge? Because it doesn't seem like it's a disappearance type of situation. It seems like they're murdered and left there under this bridge.
We have a few cases of people being murdered or going missing in this area. And we're going to talk about those in just a second. But as far as the legend itself goes, it's mostly unsubstantiated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Like I said, the asylum is undocumented as far as we can tell. Therefore, the buses going from this to the prison is kind of up in the air. And I have another piece about the prison itself and the timeline later on. But again, some of the elements are going to fall away very easily because, it is a story. But some of the elements are very kind of true to a few things that have happened, right? Okay. Now, before we go, I do want to say, you mentioned movies, and we are the movie podcast about mysteries.
That we are.
But now, we have a book podcast about movies.
Yeah, we do. That we do. And I know it sounds confusing to the friend that's listening.
Uh-huh.
With an official task force member, because I know you guys like sharing this podcast, and you're like, what are they talking about? And then the task force member just goes, it makes sense. Trust me, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yes, we
just
have
believe.
Red Web Book Club, it's hosted by myself because a ton of you guys wanted me to host something. And that's where I started off suggesting a graphic novel, which is a great horror mystery. And now we're diving into some movies. We did The Autopsy of Jane Doe. We got Scream coming up.
We're recording this out of time. So what's coming out this Friday
might not follow in line, but that's where you'll get the sense of like where the timeline is.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're testing different formats for that. And Jillian joined us on that as well. And the four of us go through, kind of give an outline of the movie and then give our reactions, opinions.
Oh, yeah.
And,
so it's going to have spoilers.
Yeah.
But come indulge. Anything horror media.
Good little watch along
getting in on
for
it.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And we all can like discuss and, you know, you guys can discuss in the comments and give us suggestions too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very excited about that show. I love an excuse to watch scary movies and read scary graphic novels and theorize. Oh, I love it.
And we can watch all the new scary movies that come out. I'm ready for a terrible one. We all go to the theater, watch a horror movie, and it's just terrible, and we just dog on it.
I think we just missed the window on, what was it, Night Swim?
Night Swim, which I heard was atrocious.
We got to go back and get it. This episode of Red Web is sponsored by Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that has over 250,000 five-star reviews, more than a simple boy like me can count on a lot of hands. Listen, I can't do the math that quick. They are on a mission to match affordability with durability, making top quality shades accessible to everyone. They have tons of styles and colors to pick from, so finding the perfect polarized shades is pretty much a breeze. Now, if you game or you stare at screens all day like I do, they also have blue light glasses to level up your gaming style and reduce eye strain all at the same time. I have so many different pairs of Shady Rays. I deeply appreciate not only the style choices that they have because they match every outfit for the occasion, but they also have the polarized lenses. You know I'm about that. It helps with glare. It helps with reflection. That way, you don't just have some like dark lens. A lot of sunglasses just have dark lenses. The polarization helps reduce the eye strain even further, so you can get out there in the sun, have a good time, and not be straining your eyes. And if you don't love your shades, you can exchange them or return them for free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop, okay? Exclusively for you Task Force members, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal. Head to ShadyRays.com, use code REDWEB, and you're going to get 35% off polarized sunglasses and snow goggles for out there carving on the slopes. Try for yourselves. The shades rated 5 stars by over 250,000 people. Again, ShadyRays.com, use code REDWEB. This episode of Red Web is sponsored by First Leaf. If you're a wine lover, here's a little secret, okay? Get close, get real up and close and comfortable. There is a personalized wine club that has amazing wines and exclusive perks, and it's called First Leaf. Oh, that part's not secret. I'm screaming it from the rooftops. As a First Leaf member, you get to discover new wines you're guaranteed to enjoy. That's because First Leaf gets to know your unique preferences. To start, you answer a few quick questions on their website about like what flavors you like, how often you drink wine, if you prefer red, white, or rosé, things like that. And based on your answers, First Leaf curates an amazing selection of wines just for you. And when you rate those wines, your wine selection gets even more tailored. I am a connoisseur, okay? I like to sip on a little bit of white, a little bit of red. Sometimes I splash them together because I'm a fiend. But I don't know a lot about wines. And so I really appreciate their quiz because it asks you, like, what kind of scents do you like? Do you like floral? Do you like a little cinnamon? Do you like some cocoa? I love all that because I didn't know wines could have that. And so it opened me up to a whole plethora of other wine styles and types and flavors. It's pretty awesome. So if you like wine, join the club today and discover new wines you'll love with First Leaf. This time I'll whisper it, okay? But now I'll say it, First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/redweb to get your first box. That's tryfirstleaf.com/redweb. tryfirstleaf.com/redweb. So, of course, what we just went over is the popular origin story, but historian and archivist for Fairfax County, Brian Connolly, believes that the urban legend actually comes about from events in the 1970s, especially because there's no records of an asylum in the area in the early 1900s. Additionally, there's no county records of the specific inmates that we mentioned earlier. And on top of that, Lorton Correctional Complex was not established until 1910, which would have been about 5 years after these inmates would have been moving from their asylum to this prison. So timeline's not adding up. It looks like people looking back with, you know, out of focus lenses, trying to look at history and go, that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, the 1900s wasn't not too far back where we'd be like far-fetched, be like, well, you know, records and stuff like that. We are kicking more into modern day 1970s. But, I mean, yeah, it's hard to put any weight behind the whole asylum bus transportation thing. There's absolutely, like, nothing at all.
Yeah, nothing substantial, so you can't put any weight on it.
It's an interesting, like, piece of storytelling.
Right. That. Especially in this time, you know, let's blame the asylum nearby.
Yeah,
or let's blame the giant, decrepit, dark building that definitely is haunted, right? You know, that tends to be, or the bridge that no one wants to go to because it's just spooky. Any bridge is spooky after night.
Bridge.
Right. Yeah. If it's not well trafficked, it's spooky.
Yes, 100%.
If the sun's gone, I'm not there.
My staircase at night is spooky.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
I get all tucked into bed and then I ask Alexa, turn off the lights, and the whole house goes dark. And I'm like, I'm already safe.
I'm good. No running through and hitting on switches.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the ghoul rules. The ghoul rules are once you're under the blanket, you're protected. You zip up the tent, you're perfectly secure.
One, I don't think that's true, but a part of me just goes,
I think it's true.
Just pictures like ghoul just going, damn it.
Right. Your foot's hanging over the bed, they're getting closer, and then you adjust, you bring it back in the bed, and they go, ah.
Homos.
Yeah.
The ghoul rules.
Helped me sleep when I was about 7. So I hold on to it. So here's what happened. So Brian Connolly, in his youth, had heard the tale told about two children who were killed by the Bunny Man because of their bad behavior. In his search for the origin of Bunny Man, Connolly, he's obsessed with his childhood stories like I am. Connolly came across crimes in the Northern Virginia area that may have actually influenced the legend. He published his findings in an article titled The Bunny Man Unmasked. In 1918, a teenager named Eva Roy was murdered in Burke, which is a suburb in Fairfax County. It's near Clifton, about 15-minute drive, maybe. She was found hanging from a tree in the woods. After her case went cold, an escaped convict from Lorton Prison claimed that he was the one who did it. He got out of prison, he escaped in some way, and he says, when he was caught, I did it. I was the one who killed Eva Roy. Though somehow later on, it was determined and confirmed that he was lying.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, if you listen to this podcast, this is a pattern.
Yep.
Multiple times people claiming to have done a very terrible thing just because they want to claim that they did.
Or in this case, you know, they want to like cover for another murderer or something.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, odd. Well, this will cause chaos if they think they got him, but they're still out there doing stuff, you know.
It's true.
And another case, there was a woman and her daughter. You have Frances and June Holober. They were murdered and buried in a shallow grave in the woods of Fairfax County in 1949. So her estranged husband was arrested for this crime and then sent to an asylum. This was factual, and he did go to an actual asylum.
Oh, okay.
So I don't want to get this conflated with these are the factual pieces.
These are actual facts.
Yeah. So Connolly later found in an article from Washington Post on October 22nd, 1970, and it was titled, quote, "Man in Bunny Suit Sought in Fairfax." So in this article, this man had attacked an Air Force Academy cadet, Robert Bennett, and his fiance in a parked car on Guinea Road while dressed as a bunny. So this seems to be where the suit's coming from and the parked car couples element's coming from. So as this article claims, this man dressed in the bunny suit supposedly yelled, quote, "You're on private property and I have your tag number." However, the girlfriend claimed that the ears that made him a rabbit actually looked like something else. To quote her, she said, quote, "like a capriote." If you haven't heard of what that is, it's like the conical hoods originally worn in Spanish Catholic ceremonies. But to modernize it, Americanize it, it's possible that this man who attacked them was a member of the KKK.
I was about to say.
The long,
pointy hood.
Pointy hood. So, on Halloween, there was another article that said the bunny man had reappeared. Quote, "A man wearing a furry rabbit suit with two long ears appeared again on Guinea Road in Fairfax County Thursday night," police reported, "this time wielding an axe and chopping away at a roof support on a new house. When this man was approached by the construction project security guard, the man said, quote, 'You're trespassing. If you come any closer, I'll chop off your head,' as reported in the Minneapolis Star. The guard then left the scene to go get their gun and come back and reapproach the person, have some sort of weapon to defend themselves on his person, but the bunny man, by that point, was gone."
So the guard spotted someone trespassing, didn't have his gun on him.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Just patrolling, making sure, you know, because he's security guard for this construction project, and you got this guy banging away on one of the new houses. He's like, "Oh, all right, gotta get this guy out of here."
I mean, it's dark, you're patrolling, you never know. Mm-hmm. Vandals, gang members. I don't know. You know, you have a gang.
Or a man in a bunny suit.
Or a man in a bunny suit. I'm patrolling with a gun in two hands. One in my ankle, too. Just, you know,
right.
And then maybe one in the back.
And you get one of those shoe knives like Will Smith.
Yeah.
Wild West. Pscah. You never know what you need.
It's just, I don't know. I couldn't be a security guard patrolling even like a mall at night.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't doing it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of like TikTok videos of security guards.
Yeah, we've seen some.
I indulge in it. I'm like, hey, props to you for going out in the dark and patrolling around the cemeteries.
It's chill as hell.
Very chill, I'm sure. And you get acclimated, I'm sure, to the dark environments start to trust. But otherwise, when you see a dark, empty mall for the first time, it's kind of spooky.
Nah, hell no.
So anyway, when describing this man in the bunny suit, there's not a lot of details he can give other than the estimated height of about 5'8". And the person was around 20 years old. Some incidents of vandalism in Burke were also attributed to this same supposed bunny man. Police reportedly received about 50 reports of the bunny man sightings in a 2-week time period.
Was this reported to the news? A lot of times, like, it'll escalate because it was reported to the news or something like that.
Yeah, so some hit newspapers, and I think that's maybe why suddenly you're seeing a bunch.
Calling in. I see him too. I've seen it.
It's like the clowns from a few years ago. Do you remember that? Like, there were clowns in sewers, and there's balloons coming out, and the clowns in the woods.
Yeah, I think there were, like, clowns getting seen on Ring doorbells too, like neighborhood stuff. Yeah, it was, like,
good.
A huge thing.
Yeah. Was just, like, everyone do this because it's, like, going viral, it's making people freak out.
Yeah.
But then none of them actually did anything, thankfully.
Right.
But it's deeply unsettling.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you just can't trust the general public with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to... The tale is old as time. One person ruins it for everybody.
Oh, yeah. And while we can talk about, you know, believing or not in the paranormal, when you see a man in a bunny suit or a man in a clown suit, you're like, that's a man. There's a man in there.
Yeah.
That's a human being that can do something.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's, like, kind of real scary.
So yeah, 50 reports of seeing the bunny man in 2 weeks. Could be a case of it being viral because of the news, or more than one person dressing up, or whatever. But at least one was reported nationally by the Arizona Republic, who wrote on November 4th that 3 children claimed to have seen a man in a bunny rabbit suit with a hatchet in Seat Pleasant, Maryland, which is about 30 miles from Fairfax County.
Interesting.
So not too far, but not too close.
But yeah, it's a different location.
But these were kids. So, you know.
That's away from the bridge, though.
It's away from the bridge.
Yeah.
So were they impressed upon the news to, like, kind of see a figure and think it was a bunny man? Or did they actually see it? This could be a point in either column.
Yep, it really could be.
But either way, these are all things that did happen, or at least were reported. Now, despite the 2 reported sightings, police during the 1970 year, specifically, weren't sure the bunny man ever actually existed. So Fairfax County Officer W.L. Johnson wrote in his report that, quote, after a very extensive investigation into this and all other cases of this same nature, it is still unsubstantiated as to whether or not there really is a white rabbit. Interestingly, on Halloween night of that same year, 1970, Johnson received a call from someone calling themselves, quote, the Axe Man. I'm wondering if they're like, I saw what you said in the paper. I'm real.
I'm real. It's me.
It me. So they said to W.L. Johnson here, the officer, they said, quote, you have been messing up my property by dumping tree stumps, limbs, and brush, and other things on the property, and asked to meet with the police to hash things out, but never showed up. Hey, props to the officer for going to the spot.
Right.
Probably very wary, quick eyes, quick hands.
Well, go to the spot alone, but at a moment's notice. 5 sniper lasers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
hello, bunny man.
It's a trap bunny man.
He's standing under the light, back to the bunny man,
yep.
Smoking a cigar.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you wouldn't come. Snaps his fingers, 10 yep. laser beams in the night, triangulate yep. right on his soulful little forehead.
Yeah, and then they put a giant net on him and catch him like a bunny.
Yeah, yeah. I've always wanted a rabbit.
Yeah.
So it's possible that a specific local of the Fairfax County area was frustrated with the growth and construction, all the new neighborhoods going on in Burke and Fairfax,
yeah.
and might have just taken it out by, this is the only thing they had in arm's reach, a bunny suit that would kind of help hide their figure, their build, would help hide their face.
Yeah.
And so the only thing you would really see from them is their height and maybe a little bit of their face, because we had somebody say they looked about 20 years old.
Which was surprising when I heard. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, I mean, it could be anyone, right? But
to see someone's 20, but not be like brown eyes,
yeah,
blue hair,
right?
You know,
well, how are you losing the details in that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know what they look like, but God, they were handsome. Yeah. Well, okay,
yeah,
that's weird.
Definitely 21 years old.
Yeah,
just nailing the age.
So those are the kind of specific true crime elements that Brian Connolly believes kindled the story in the yeah. 70s. And man, I gotta say, a lot of these urban legends, stories of UFOs we talked about in recent weeks with Roswell and everything, a lot of these stories really stem from mid-century. The 60s into the 70s are where a lot of
yeah, I feel like
wild
a lot
things
of
happened.
That was birthed.
Yeah.
Cryptids and all that kind of stuff. People were going buck wild with stories and really escalating the presence of these
mm-hmm.
Beings.
But now that we've kind of talked about the story, we've talked about perhaps the origin, some of the true crime histories, I want to talk about some of the final sightings and one true crime element that happens in this location in recent history.
Oh.
That a lot of people use to substantiate the bunny man, but we'll see. There could be a wrinkle there. Okay. I think there's a wrinkle there. So, while it appears that the true story of the bunny man is mixed across multiple incidents, the Bunny Man Bridge receives many visitors every year. And based on online discussions, it seems that the area is often very foggy, feels very creepy, of course.
Yeah.
Especially after night. And it doesn't even matter if you believe it or not. People have gone and have always reported that they feel very eerie, regardless of their belief in the legend. And some claim that if you park your car or leave it under the bridge, an unknown force will push it. That is another common trend I've noticed with like haunted bridges and roads, that if you park your car and kind of leave it, that it will move, like it'll get pushed. It's
what?
Like, usually the story is like, it's pushed out of the way because yeah. this is where I crashed and I died. So let me push you to safety. you know, your car can idle if you don't put it in park, if you leave it in drive, if you put it in neutral, if there's a non-zero grade, it could technically be a slope that it rolls down.
Yeah, it rolls down a bit.
A few elements that could be happening there. So, interestingly, this brings us up to modern times. There was a body that was in fact discovered only a couple hundred feet from the bridge itself in 2018. It's somewhat strange because as of this time period, not only 2018, but now, this was a dead-end residential road, so this is not usually a well-trafficked area. It doesn't seem to make sense that somebody would end up there unless something nefarious was happening.
Yeah.
So according to NBC Washington, the death was investigated as a murder, but there was no connection to the Bunny Man. However, police told Fox News 5DC that they couldn't rule it out at the time. In 2020, three men were arrested and the murder was found to be drug-related according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office. But despite that arrest, despite a apparent conviction, some people claim, nope, this is in fact proof that the Bunny Man is real and still very active even to this day.
Well, maybe the Bunny Man has turned a new leaf and is going after bad people.
He says, having a deal on my residential road, I see.
Not today.
Not today.
Well,
the Bunny Man always gets his take.
Well, yeah, the Bunny Man wants his cut. The thing is, like, it's a bridge at night.
Yeah.
People are going to do shady things in the dark. So it's a perfect landmark to be like, let's meet there and do, like, illegal things.
Right.
That being said, those people generally are in the, like, in the spectrum of, like, I'll commit a crime, whether it be murdering someone, stealing from someone, etc. So, you know, not the best citizens. So the, you know, the probability of something going sideways are always much higher.
It just seems like, drug deal gone bad in a, I mean, if you remove all legend, this is just a dark removed spot.
Yep.
Very much near a metropolitan area. I mean, we are not far from downtown Washington, D.C. here.
Yeah.
You are kind of out in the suburbs, but if a deal's going to go down and you don't want anyone to see, this seems like a prime spot.
Easy landmark.
Yeah, it seems maybe more like a coincidence.
Right.
Maybe the people doing the deal wanted the fear of the location.
I'd be interested to see what time it goes down. I mean, it's got to be after 12, right?
Right.
Which is, maybe. I mean, it probably went down like around 1 or 2
or something. Dealers could have an early bedtime,
but,
you know, early to bed, early to rise.
But then, like, you know, hold on now. What's when does it end? How we find that out?
In the sequel, Bunny Man 2.
That's true.
The Return.
That's very true.
This is
the drug deal situation does sound like the beginning of the movie.
Honestly, there's always a scene like that where you're just watching normal life happen, and then an electric ball shows up nearby. and then there's a naked Arnold Schwarzenegger that shows up and then asks for your clothes. You know, it's always something normal happening until it goes south.
Always a naked bodybuilder.
When a naked bodybuilder shows up and demands your clothes, just do
it. An everyday drug deal with a naked bodybuilder.
Right. But that is the urban legend of the Bunny Man. Maybe how it began, maybe how it ended.
Definitely feels like urban legend.
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
There's a lot of, like, storytelling involved.
Mm-hmm.
Then what helps substantiate it is the urban legend is created, then it brings a lot of attention to the area, and then you start pinpointing the things that went down in this area, and then use that to substantiate the urban legend.
It's a very interesting one, and I think I love the storytelling aspect of this, because while it is more inclined to be not true, my interest was diving deeper and figuring out, what's the origin of some of these urban legends? How do they come about? What's going on in the zeitgeist, in culture at the moment? Or what kind of crimes might be happening that obviously people plucked some of the elements from some of these crimes to then embellish the story? But that all comes from, again, the historian and archivist from Fairfax County, Brian Connolly. I think fascinating.
I you know, anytime we're going to cover urban legends on, on, or just hear about it anywhere, I'm always going to think, okay, obviously, it's going to be kind of like fluffed up, right? It's an urban legend. But the enticing part about it is, what's the location?
Mm-hmm.
What is the urban legend? And then what are the rules around it?
Right. Because there's always rules.
Yeah, there's always rules.
Yeah. This one is a little less creative. They pulled that Bloody Mary element.
You know? That earlier is like, oh, you say Bunny Man three times. Like, we've already got that.
Right. After midnight thing, I'll give it to them.
Yeah.
A little less, it's less inspired.
Right.
But not as common.
Or like, you know, Bloody Mary's going to sue Bunny Man because like, that's my thing.
Whoa. What if I do Bloody Mary and you do Bunny Man and then we'll say, all right, hold on. Before you slash me to pieces, I need to tell you.
You guys need to have a talk.
We got somebody over here who's copping your bit. You need to meet. And then they go to town like Jason versus Freddy.
That'd be the dumbest. That'd be like the craziest, but also dumbest moment simultaneously in our lives.
Yeah, dude. And it would be so cool. I'd be there with my VHS camera. Because none of these ever survive 4K. I've never seen a 4K video of an alien or ghost show up to my face.
Yeah.
So something must happen with that. So therefore, I will continue to use degraded, bad footage.
Gotta be.
Because ghosts allow that. That's why.
And, like, what year? I mean, it should have happened already. But I'm like, what year is it going to be when we finally cross into, like, okay, everything is, like, high definition?
For paranormal evidence?
Like, yeah.
Well, once we're past ultra HD, ghost evidence will hit HD.
Okay.
So our human eyes will have elevated.
Yeah.
And we still won't like it.
That's true.
You know?
Because I remember looking at like 480p, 720p resolution. I'm like, this is amazing. Now I go.
Right. Whoa, 720i.
So blurry.
Excellent.
Yeah, interlaced.
Yeah.
Are we getting into way too much nerd?
We're geeking out now. But yeah, so it's a pretty straightforward case. Happy to discuss another urban legend. One we did before a long time ago was Polybius, the urban legend of the arcade machine, the arcade cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Showed up in Loki, the Disney show.
It did.
But so Task Force, if you want to check that one out, available for you.
Polybius.
Back in our old archives.
Plebes. Plebius. Man.
I think he's melting.
That's why it's not popular. People can't say its name.
You know what? That's a very valid point. Wrinkle in the theory. No one can say it. That's why it didn't catch on. All right, Task Force and Fredo, I'll see you right back here next Monday for yet another mystery.
Plebius.